It's time for To The Last Drop podcast with Liam Del Carme and Brendan Nell.
We're back. It's To The Last Drop. I'm Brendan Nell. And with me is...
Liam Del Carme.
I dropped that on him. He didn't know I was going to make him do that. But Liam, welcome. We're back. I'm back from a bit of an extended holiday. I was overseas in a wonderful part of the world called the Philippines, where Liam's ancestors, I never knew that, come from. So flew into Del Carmen Airport, which is apparently named after your family somewhere in the
Okay, I'm not going to say that.
But I thought, listen, if you ever find that sort of ancestry and you can find a piece of land there, then it'd be worth it because it is a beautiful part of the world and not one that many South Africans go to.
I should explore this. Maybe look into it. Maybe there's a long lost uncle or something. You never know.
Yeah, you never know. If people claim Welsh ancestry and Irish ancestry, I'm sure we can do something on there a bit different. But anyway, it's back to URC this week and quite a big weekend coming up. It's a tough weekend to get. All the teams have had a break, all those players not playing in Six Nations. So the teams that have less Six Nations players are going to be quite well rested, quite well versed, and really had 3 weeks to prepare for that. That includes the South African teams. Most of them had time off, so it should be quite interesting to see what happens this weekend. And two of our South African teams go overseas, two of them host teams. Yeah, let's maybe kick off with the Stormers. We're going to make a prediction while we're doing this as well, I'm sure. The Stormers are hosting Edinburgh, which is an interesting one because Edinburgh are probably going to have to rest some of their players this weekend.
They probably would, yes. I know that they'll probably also go into the game thinking that they know a thing or two about the Stormers and maybe know, you know, how to go about playing them with Sean Everett in charge of Edinburgh. You would expect the Stormers to win this one, given obviously the rest factor that we spoke about, and the fact that, you know, they've got this fantastic home record. So, you know, I think the Stormers will have just too much going for them in this particular encounter.
That's an interesting point, though, that with them having to rest some of the players, I think five or six Scottish players this weekend, which means they probably will be back next weekend, which is when Edinburgh goes to Durban, to Sean Everett's old stomping ground, where let's be honest, he didn't leave on the – and he said it to us on this podcast – didn't probably leave on his terms. So there's going to be quite a bit of motivation in that game and to have to try and get a victory over his own team. And the way the Sharks are at the moment, I think he could be quite confident in hoping to get a victory next week.
Yeah, it's just going to be a big question for him in terms of how he reintegrates those players. It shouldn't be a big issue. I think, obviously, you know, those players know the systems well enough. So I think he'll obviously absolutely relish the fact that he will have a full squad to choose from or near full squad to choose from and go to Durban and maybe prove a point.
It's going to be also interesting. One of the things I saw this last week since I've been back on Facebook, that Piers Koeman and Duan van der Merwe have launched their own whiskey in Scotland, which should be very interesting to see a Boere Scot mixture there. I think one of the things we're going to have to do is try and get hold of them and try and get them on the show to explain exactly why and how much brandy influence is in that Scottish whiskey.
Yeah, some whiskies are made for mixing. And I'm just wondering whether this isn't one of them. I don't want to speak out of turn, but it might be.
Well, keep watch the space. We'll see if we can get them on and to explain for themselves. But yeah, that big one, I think I agree with them. Stormers should win that one quite easily. I think, though, down in Durban, when we were down there a couple of weeks ago, they kept on talking about the turnaround. That turnaround hasn't come. And with every week that the turnaround doesn't come, the pressure amps up, not just on the coaching staff there, but also on the management. They've got some, you know, very, very, I won't say demanding, but very motivated owners who want to see results at some point. And they've certainly been buying in the last couple of weeks. I mean, the Trevor Niakanis, the Emmanuel Chitukas, Jason Jenkins, they've certainly been stocking up on players. But that doesn't really make a difference this week when Ulster come. And Ulster themselves haven't been in a good spot. They've got said goodbye to a coach recently, got a new coach coming in. Not often you see a coach getting sacked mid-season. So that's going to be quite an interesting one as well to watch.
Yeah, despite all of that with Ulster, they are still fifth. And, you know, they are in still an indecent shape in terms of playoffs. And you also probably have to say that they are more of a team in terms of their cohesion, the way they've gelled this season than the Sharks. So as much as the Sharks have made these additions to their squad, they can only, it's only the 15 on the field at a particular time that really matters. So, you know, but it's still going to be a challenge for them. And Ulster's also one of those sides, they are, whether you play them home and away, they just never go away. So they'll be snapping at the Sharks' heels all the time. And it's going to come down to game management in the end. And that's probably not one of the things that the Sharks have mastered this year. So it's going to be a very demanding game for them.
Yeah, but it's games like these that you as a coach with John Plumtree would want to see that turnaround. You'd want to see it in a game like this. Because these are the precisely those games you're going to have to dig a bit deeper to win. And, Ulster, they don't have many Irish players. So they'll definitely have, a sort of settled squad coming to Durban as well. And they seem to like South Africa. The last two seasons have been good.
Yeah, I think if the Sharks come through this one, whether it's by 10 points or just by 2, if they can quell that Ulster challenge, I think it'll be a big confidence booster for them.
Talking of confidence boosters, the Lions, without Henko van Wyk, who's injured, are heading up to the sports ground in Galway to face Connacht. Difficult game. No South African team has ever won at Connacht. I'm not sure if it's because the rain falls sideways in Galway or if any other reason.
It comes out of the ground.
but it's a tough place to play. And the locals seem to enjoy those harsh conditions there, aren't they?
Absolutely. Yeah, no, they come prepared. I mean, those padded jackets and the hoodies. Probably a very demanding game for the Lions. I think only Irish teams have won there. I think Leinster won there earlier this year. So, you know, if you're not from the island, it's going to be, it's a tall order. So, yeah, you would expect Connacht to come through that one. I will say this, though, the Lions, they showed encouraging form on the road. In fact, they ran Ulster close on one of their previous tours. If they can replicate that kind of performance, they'll have a chance in this one. And also, they'll have proper incentive. I mean, they're 11th on the points table. Connacht in 7th, so whatever gains they can make against teams ahead of them will serve them really well. So I expect them to be really motivated, but still a tall order.
Yeah, it's also depending on how the weather is on Saturday, you're going to have to play, manage your game plan very well. And the Lions are good at playing free-flowing rugby and when they get the ball in front of them, but sometimes game management hasn't been their biggest strength as well, and consistency. So hoping they've got nothing to lose. The odds will probably be stacked against them anyway. So we might as well have a go.
Yeah, it's also the kind of venue where if there is a howling breeze, it's a game you kind of maybe want a guy like Jordan Hendricks with that booming boot, but then also you kind of want the control as well from your 10, and I'm not sure he's done that with
great convictions. So, lots of question marks there as well, and it'd be interesting to see how the Sharks stealing a couple of the Lions players, how those sort of you spoke with Jordan Hendricks, he's another one going to the Sharks next season. Now that's going to sort of influence that. It was announced in the off weeks, but there are certain things that influence games and influence squads. And the Lions, when they play well, they're a cohesive squad that plays for each other. So, yes, hoping that continues and they get a good win over there. I think the odds are stacked up against them there. I would say probably go for a Connacht victory just on history with no South African side having won there in the URC just yet.
Yeah, and it looks also like they're going to load their dice for the first two games on tour, the URC games, and then rotate for the Challenge Cup game further down the line. So, it looks like they'll go hard early on.
It's an interesting one because you've got to stack up. And I think that's the prospect facing a lot of the teams. The Bulls, we'll get to next. Same sort of thing is you want to win these two URC games because there's a lot of reward if you do. But then you've got the knockout in the round of 16 for either Challenger Champions Cup. And surely you want to do that as well because that's also, yeah. And it's just which team and which combination of the players do you do. Put out on the field, and that makes squad management so much more difficult. But yeah, let's get to the Bulls second on the log. It's not often Jake smiling, and after that Stormers win, he was smiling very broadly. Glad not to have
Cheshire Cat comes to mind.
Yeah, glad not to have to answer those questions anymore. Yeah, about the losing streak, and I think that was definitely a win that the Bulls seriously needed, probably more than anything else in terms of the competition, but just for their own self confidence. They've got Dragons this week. Dragons are a tricky side. Everything says the Bulls should win that one. The Dragons haven't been the best in this competition, but they're a potential banana peel if you don't play them right.
Not a Dwayne peel. Look, if this game was 1 week late, in other words, if the Bulls had a game this week and then played the Dragons the following week, in terms of resting players and squad rotation, that kind of thing, I would have said absolutely they can feel free to do it. But because there probably has been a bit of a, you know, the weeks off, it's potentially a rhythm breaker. So you want to get back to sort of where you left off as quickly as you can. Look, they can probably still get away with it where they, you know, make wholesale changes and we'll get through this fixture unscathed. But, you know, ideally, I think if it was one game in a sequence of, you know, maybe the second or third game, in a sequence of four games, for instance, then, you know, you could have rotated that squad. But you'd still expect the Bulls to win. Well, it doesn't matter which team they put out.
The only reason I say that, Bulls teams don't traditionally travel very well. That's the first thing. Last season, they were expected to win against Scarlets and ended up playing a horrible game there and losing. They were really out of sorts. That's the only thing about this Bulls team that still worries me. They don't have that sort of killer instinct in them like we've seen the Bulls teams of maybe a decade ago of the Victor and Faree and Bucky's sort of era. You know, those teams you knew were going to win. Yeah, you'd expect a very good team to beat them, but they'd have to be very good.
Although this season, I think the Bulls have an extra gear on that front as opposed to...
They're definitely better. I just don't know if they... championship material just yet, and I know Bulls supporters probably won't like me saying that, and probably Jake won't like me saying that, but I think they still do have a couple of chinks in their armor they need to sort out, but definitely better than last season.
Definitely better than the Dragons this week. They should win.
Well, that's the other thing. I mean, how low is Welsh rugby? The national team, we see Warren Gatlin storming out of interviews, and we see their results being terrible. But you sort of feel that even though they're in the doldrums, they've got some great young players coming through, and the big thing is to manage them. And I mean, we want Welsh rugby to be strong.
Well, they've also held on to other players for way too long. I mean, that's the other reality they have to face up to. You're right. I mean, they're kind of forced into the situation now, and they are some fantastic young players. Unfortunately, as with most things like this, you're going to have to bide your time and, you know, just hope these guys come good sooner rather than later.
I'm just going to make a bit of a harsh comment here. It sometimes feels to me Welsh rugby almost sort of gets very excited very quickly about a player who has one good game and sort of it keeps him to sort of local standards and not sort of the competition standards, if I compare it that way. A player will have a good game and they'll talk of him about being the second coming of, I don't know, Gareth Edwards.
Don't say it.
One of those. But or Barry John, or you all these comparisons, and you think this guy's 19, he's played two games, give him a chance, and I give him a second season, and that sometimes I feel the Welsh because if he
hasn't crossed the Severn Bridge yet.
Let's be honest, if you listen to the Welsh commentators, and they're lovely to listen to, and they're lovely. I enjoy Welsh people a lot and the Welsh supporters, but you listen to the Welsh commentators, it sounds like even when they're 45-0 down, they're winning this game by a big margin, and Yeah, it's quite funny sometimes. Very parochial, and we love them for it. But they've got some good talent coming through, and I think let's leave it at that. Let them. They need to have some patience, and before I get Welsh hate mail coming through here, let's leave it at that. I think the Bulls should win that one. But yeah, just to end that sort of section of the South African teams, leave you with a clip from Jake just talking about why he feels his team is in such a good situation at the moment. Why they can play, in his words, for big things, because there's big rewards waiting.
Well, look, it's a nice place to go. I'm talking about where we are now, top of the South African group. I know not the conference, because the conference is different, but to have 40 points in a lot of permutations, and I've been reading in the media about how many more you need for a... And as I said to the players, it's quite a nice place to be now, where the next month, obviously we play our best rugby in the next month, we get to... say we play our best rugby and we beat Leinster away, Dragons away, Leon here, and then the quarterfinal away, you're almost guaranteed of making two semifinals in two competitions. Now, it's a hell of a nice place to be as a club, It's not given. I'm not jumping the gun. I'm just saying to you that we've got our own destiny in the next month in our hands, and I know we're good enough. I know that if we play well enough, we can beat those teams. So, because we've done it before. So that's the nice thing, is that we've got our own destiny in our hands and run-up games, but it's a nice, exciting time of run-up games as well. It's not just, there's a lot to be playing for, which is always nice. I often talk about the analogy, Heinz, about playing in the Masters and you play Friday to make the cut. You feel pressure. But when you're walking down the 18th and you have a chance to win the Masters, it's a hell of a nice pressure to have, even though it's pressure as well. So... we're there now. We've created a nice buffer for us. We've created a nice opportunity for us to be able to play for big things. And I would like us to play in the next month like a team that's happy to be in that situation.
You're with Brendan Nell and Liam Delcom on the To The Last Drop podcast.
And then let's run quickly through the last couple of games as well. We'll go through, start Glasgow hosting Cardiff on Friday. I'd say Glasgow probably quite an easy win there, depending, of course, how many Scottish stars are out and how many Welsh stars are.
I think Glasgow, if you look at the balance of their season, they've been one of the consistent operators. They are, of course, also fighting on multiple fronts. So, the Mexican matching of match day squads, for instance, is going to be tricky, but they should still have enough in this game.
Another one is pretty similar scenario. I think Ospreys, Munster. You'd always expect Munster to probably take that one, but again, depending on squad selections.
Yeah, Ospreys, when I looked at the log, it was one of those strange ones because they've had some decent results here and there, but it's not necessarily reflected on the log. I think they've only got, I know this is a home game, but they've only won twice on the road. So at home, they are a bit of a handful. They're a very difficult team to sort of put your finger on. I think Munster will still win. I think the mongrel will come back, and I think they'll keep them at arm's length.
Yeah, another one I think we also on Saturday, a game that's sort of at the same time as the Stormers. Scarlets Benetton, which I think Benetton probably with the Italian rugby is a bit on the high at the moment. And that Benetton team is basically the Italian team. So,
how many of those guys will play then?
Well, that's the question. If they play, I'd say Benetton win. If they don't, 50-50.
So, that's fair comment.
Then on Saturday, the other late game, Zebre against Leinster. Leinster will probably rest basically almost the entire first team, but Leinster's the one anomaly in this where their second team is probably almost as good as most other teams in the competition. So, say a away win for Leinster there, but quite probably an open game, high scoring game, I reckon.
I think it'll be open. Zebra's only got one win. They sit 13th, but they only got one win. So they've assembled or got bonus points all along the way. So they've played a decent brand of rugby at least. So I expect this, to be quite an open affair. And it doesn't matter if you're going to play Leinster tight or whether it's going to be a bit of a helter-skelter. I think they're still going to beat you.
And before we go into our second part of our pod, just last thing, the Six Nations ended. Did the greatest team in the world win the Six Nations there?
I think the best team in a very shallow pool won the Six Nations. If you look at the results elsewhere, you know, England have made some improvements, no doubt. But, you know, they ran France close. So they finished the championship well. They ran France close. They beat Ireland, but then obviously lost their way elsewhere. I know they really regret the loss against Scotland. Scotland lost to Ireland, not to Ireland, well, to Ireland as well, but also to Italy. France lost their way early on against Ireland. But, you know, but Ireland by far clearly was, you know, they were the best side, no doubt. And it looks like they've put the World Cup disappointment a bit better behind them than, say, France. There's some encouragement, I think, for England, the way they finished. Scotland, with just the two wins, I think will be disappointed. Some unexpected hiccups there for them. And then I think if you're Italian, you'll be quite enthused by some of the results. Yeah. Monkey off the bat, all that.
I think Italy, by far, the team of the tournament, I mean, just from a romantic point of view, just...
Yeah.
They showed some backbone, they showed some grit, and played some beautiful rugby at times. And, yeah, even that game against England right at the beginning, they probably, you know, if they had a bit more... playing a bit more like they were at the end, they could have probably started in that game as well. So they were the team, most improved team to me. Ireland were certainly a cut above, and it sets us up nicely for the test series against the Springboks, where I saw somebody on Twitter say the other day, the Six Nations champion against the 20 Nations champion. So, which would be an interesting way of putting it. But yeah, that should make it a bit of an interesting tussle in June, July, when they come down, yeah. But yeah, I think other than that, you know, not the greatest Six Nations. I know competitive, but quality at times, I thought maybe a bit less than a year or two ago. So
yeah, I'll go back to the commentators who keep reminding us about it being the best championship in the world. And certainly in terms of hype, it certainly is. They do know how to put on a show as far as that's concerned. But quality on the field, not so sure. I mean, we've had some interesting battles, make no mistake. There were games where teams had a proper go at each other, but I'm not going to suggest for one moment that the Six Nations is a better product than the Rugby Championship.
And with that, we'll turn to our second part of the pod. As I was away, Liam filled in. He's got a very nice exclusive interview with Luit de Jager, all the way from Japan. Liam talks to him about his Springbok prospects, missing out on the World Cup, and a few other things there.
Yeah, it was very kind of Luit to extend half an hour of his time. And as always, he was very engaging. You ask a straight question, he gives you a straight answer. And I was happy to talk about that ordeal he went through, because obviously he missed the World Cup because of that heart condition. It was picked up at the 11th hour. It's basically informed the day before the squad announcement that, you know, this is bad news, you won't be able to travel. And then he also deals with the rehab, the actual steps he had to take to get fit again. So there's the mental anguish, there's the, you know, getting your body back into shape element to it as well. He speaks about his time in Japan, how he enjoys that, and how, you know, the club is quite understanding of giving players family time. So, but, you know, people should have a listen. He was as engaging as ever, and it was real fun to chat to him.
Yeah, and Alert is always a good character to chat to, a really straight-talking guy, and we hope to see him back on the field very soon, because he was missed in the World Cup, and, while it did open the door for one or two other players, I think we want him back in Springbok rugby as quickly as possible. But have a listen. Listen to the big man himself and, the straight shooter that he is.
Dag, say Luit. It's fantastic to see you. And it's great to see you back on the field as well. I also wanted to ask a question around the mental part of your recovery. Obviously, you've had some setbacks in the past with parts of the body that breaks down from time to time, takes you to the sidelines, and then you have to come back. Did that at all help you in this process? Because you would think that, you know, if you've spent all that time on the sideline before, it should help in this instance.
Yeah, Liam, good to hear a little bit of Afrikaans there. no, it has to a certain extent, it did help. I just think this was something completely different, but I think, you know, the muscle memory thing of being used to doing rehab, getting your body going again and back on the field, and that mental state of getting through the whole process of a rehab, a rehab stint. I think that did help, having to do that a couple times in my career already. So, yeah, I think to a certain extent, definitely did help.
Was that all the time where you thought, okay, this seems like a huge challenge or a huge slog and it might not be worth it? Or did your mind ever go there?
Oh, well, no, not really. I think it's obviously initially you just get a big fright, you know, you don't assume anything, you know, especially in sports, anything that's got to do with the heart, you know, you panic a little bit and people panic. So I think initially it was a bit of a shock. But then, you know, the cardiologist sat me down and explained this to me and said, we've had this before, we've had it in sport before. This is not at all a career ender, or if you treat this right and you discipline and you handle the initial rehabilitation period well, you should be 100% fine to play within, he said, 3 to 6 months. It just depends. Some people's inflammation lasts a bit longer, some people's go a bit quicker. So he really gave me peace of mind that, listen, if I do my bit and I stay disciplined, this shouldn't be the end of the world. So I think that helped me a lot.
You explained earlier with if you pick up an injury, you're still able to train other parts of the body and sort of maintain that. In this instance, what part of your game do you think suffered most? So once you get back, you know, what is the part of your game that you feel it's sort of you have to catch up most?
It's the lungs, eh? The lungs, the fitness. I think you're not really, the tackling and carrying and all that, it comes with time. Listen, my first game, I wasn't immediately, you know, I didn't feel like, you know, when you're out of it for a little bit, it just feels like everything happens a bit quicker, a bit faster. So I think gradually as the games went on, I've been feeling more comfortable with that. But there was no real part that stood out for me that was tough. I just think it was the fitness, you know, physically getting off the ground, you know, mauling, scrumming, you know, that kind of stuff. It's just one thing in rugby. You can't really replicate a rugby game. There's no fitness session that can simulate a rugby game. A rugby game is something completely different. So I think for me, it was just, you know, the general rugby fitness, match fitness, getting that back.
And given the way the Springboks play, and you obviously have to assess your fitness as you go along, how far down that path do you think you are to get to sort of that level that they expect that they sort of uphold from 1 week to the next?
Well, it's difficult to say, Liam. I think it's a bit different than we play here, but I think there's also, you can get conditions for that and get used to that, and they know what works to get conditioned for the type of style of play. And hopefully if I'm selected to be there or in the plans, you'll have a couple of weeks with the Japanese season ending earlier than the rest of, you know, the rest of like Europe or the URC. We'll have an extra couple of weeks, the Japanese guys, to be in camp and work on our fitness. They'll be able to see and assess my fitness and make a decision from there. But I think honestly feel fitter than I did last year this time. So that's my personal how I feel now.
This may seem a bit of a weird one, but what did you miss most? I know missing out on a World Cup is a massive thing, but what did you miss most about not being with the box?
I just miss the guys, you know, my friends, my mates that I've played with. I've been lucky enough to be a part of this Springbok squad since 2014, you know, so you make good friends with a lot of the guys. A lot of guys have been there for quite some time. So, you know, just that camaraderie, the small little chats you have, the jokes you make, the training all together, playing all together, but then afterwards having a beer or, you know, just having, you know, a conversation with the boys and having a laugh. I think that's what you miss most about it.
Are you a numbers guy? The reason I ask is you and Eben have the second most number of caps as a lock combination for the Springboks. And then there's obviously Buckies and Victor who are way ahead. Is that something that plays on your, not plays on your mind, but like something that you sort of look at as motivation? Like, you know, these are the things that sort of keeps you going?
Yeah, I think it's a difficult one. You know, I've had a few injuries. I reckon I could have had a few more caps, or me and Evan could have had a few more, you know, caps together. But, you know, that's life. It's a difficult one to go start chasing caps and all that. Some guys get injured more than others. That's life. Some guys get injured when it's international season. Other guys get injured when it's club season and off to play when the internationals come around. So for me, honestly, at the moment, my mindset's just hope I get another opportunity to wear that jersey, and every opportunity I get is to make the most of it. You know, it's just that classic, you know, that cliche saying of, you don't know what you've got till it's gone. You know, so for me, it's hopefully just get another crack at it and see how it goes.
I don't want to drag you into uncomfortable territory, but there is a new Springbok coach, but it's also, you know, almost the same thing. Do you expect anything to be different? I mean, obviously after a World Cup, there will have to be a process of renewal and maybe a rethink of certain things. But do you expect things to change much?
Well, I think definitely things will change. You know, there's, for instance, Dwayne retired, so there's got to be someone new coming. Dwayne, you know, there's a lot of examples. It's going to be a bit different. You know, everybody's 4 years older at the next World Cup. I think you know, Rush is the right guy. Everybody knows that. He'll make calculated decisions and see how guys go and do, you know, will it be too far for some guys in 4 years' time, or will it not? And there's no better guy than to make those decisions than him and his coaching staff. So for me, I reckon, or for any player that wants to play for the Boxes, just make sure you perform week in, week out, and the rest is not really in your hands, you know. That's their decision. So, yeah.
You're with Liam Delcom and Brendan Nell on the To The Last Drop podcast.
Oh, yes. It's quite a weird one. I think for me, playing the game wasn't as much of a comeback as getting into full training. I think after the long layoff, you know, it's always tricky when you deal with those type of conditions that, you know, to get the heart rate up again and stuff like that is always going to be, you know, a bit worrying. But so for me, it was more getting into full training than actually playing the match, because I didn't have any, like, you know, physical issues. I mean, like a shoulder or a knee that would hinder me from playing well. So for me, it was just to get my fitness back, general fitness back, and be able to, you know, to push my body again, to be able to play and to be fit enough to play. I think that was the biggest challenge for me. So it was all worked out by heart rates, and obviously by the cardiologists, the people who were experts on the field. They would, so I would start off the first 10 weeks was nothing. I couldn't get my heart rate above 100. I wasn't allowed to take my heart rate above 100 beats per minute. So it was just rest, and then gradually it was 2 weeks of heart rate between 100 and 120, and then 120 to 140. And gradually they worked it up until I got to my allowed to train to max heart rate, which is probably, that was 4.5-5 months down the road. I could finally start training and taking my body to max heart rate levels. So yeah, it was a gradual build up. I'd say from when I could start taking my heart rate above 100, it was probably, I'd say, another 8 weeks. 8 to 10 weeks before I was allowed to fully train, start training with the team. It was a big credit to the Springbok medical staff, because it was actually misdiagnosed in Argentina, and then because I went for the scans there, that's where I first picked it up that there's an issue. So I went for scans and tests there, and they didn't quite pick it up because I didn't go for an MRI. And then our team doctor was like, let's just make sure when we get back to South Africa that we didn't miss anything, and that it was actually then when they picked it up, they picked up the pericarditis. So very thankful. I think it could have been, yeah, it could have ended terribly. Those last 3 weeks, that quarterfinal, semifinal, final was the quarterfinal. I said I'm watching with nobody. I'm watching it alone. I get a bit worked up. So the quarterfinal, I said I'm watching with no one, and that was brutal. That was very, you know, stressful. I wasn't. I was joking with people and saying, "Listen, this is not the best best for my heart watching this quarterfinal, semifinal, and final." You know, with pericarditis. I don't know if that's a very good thing, but so the quarterfinal I watched on my own. Semifinal, actually with friends. I thought just thought against England. I knew the French would be a tough game. I thought against England, you know, with their performances early on, we'd have maybe a bit of an easier game, but that was not the case at all. They played extremely well in that game, and it was even more stressful than the quarterfinal. And in the final, I watched with my dad. My dad I thought by myself, when will I ever get the opportunity again to watch a final with my dad, you know? So it was good to watch that with him and my wife and then my mom and this a couple of close family and friends, and it was very special indeed winning that thing for the second time and seeing how much it meant for the people and the country. People were driving down the streets with flags and honking and playing music, and it was an unbelievable thing to experience. So I think it was lingering for quite a while. I had a viral infection that I wasn't aware of because I didn't have any fever and stuff like that. I had a few symptoms, but I didn't have all the symptoms, and I kept training and stuff with it. And I think obviously that just put the heart under more pressure, and that's how I ended up with the fluid around the heart, or pericarditis was the medical term for it. So, but the exact time I started feeling real symptoms that was worrying was we had a training session before Argentina test in Argentina, and we're on a Monday. It's usually the kicking game session. It's more a flush session. It's not an intense session. It's more just to get the body going after a big weekend or playing on the weekend. And 5 minutes in, I just felt like someone was sitting on my chest. I couldn't breathe. I felt like I was almost suffocating. Just pressure on my chest and a very shortness of breath. Just a very eerie feeling, and I just walked off the field and I told the doctor something's not right. And obviously in that moment you're not quite sure. You just think maybe you're a bit sick, or it's COVID. You're not quite sure what it is. And he pulled me. He said, "No, let's see again tomorrow. Let's tonight give you some antibiotics. Get you started on a give you an inhaler, that kind of stuff to see if that helps." And then the Tuesday morning, I just felt no good, and they just said, "No, you're out for this week." And they just I did some tests in Argentina. Just stayed in my hotel room, rested. Didn't have any. Actually, it wasn't even part of any of the team things. I just stayed in my hotel until we flew back. And then as soon as we flew back, I had this, because I had a few scans and stuff in Argentina, but they didn't pick up the pericarditis. It was only back in ESA when I went for the MRI and they saw the fluid that was there. It's a weird one, thinking back, you don't know how you got through it, but I just think it's one of those things where there's no other choice. So I couldn't do anything for the first 10 weeks. So So I saw the cardiologist, and he said 6 weeks later he wants to see me again and do another MRI and do another echo scan of the heart and see how it goes.
Yes.
And then and you just work off that. You just work off the amount of fluid they see, and until that disappears, there's not much you can do. So for 10 weeks, there was still a little bit of residual fluid left, and then after 10 weeks was the first time my scan was clear. And it wasn't anything. And then he said, "Okay, now we can start gradually building it up." And it was another probably 10 weeks or 8 to 10 weeks from there till I got clear to train, fully train with with son. I think especially with the World Cup and build up to the World Cup, and I literally did my scan. They diagnosed me the day the squad got announced, or the day before. So the timing wasn't ideal. But again, that's life, I'm just thankful that I get to sit here. It could have been way worse, could have missed it, and I went down and trained again or played again, and you never know what could happen. So, all in all, I'm just grateful to be back, and it was an interesting experience. Good story to have, good story to tell one day. that initial 6 weeks or say 8 weeks is very important, that you do nothing. There's certain things you can't eat. Can't eat anything that adds to the inflammatory effect, so anything that causes inflammation, you stay away from. So I try to eat well, rest completely, and I think if you get that stage right and the fluid's gone, it's gone, and then you can start building that up. So he made it really clear to me that this is the most important part, is that initial, I'd say, 6 to 8 weeks. Yeah, so anti-inflammatories, and interestingly enough, they give you medicine that they use for gout, because gout is also gout's like fluid, because it's basically fluid that's around the membrane of the heart, so they have to Yeah, so they give you anti-inflammatories and gout medicine, which is interesting. I've tried to explain it to people. If you say you injure your knee or your shoulder, you're still training other bits of your body, so you're keeping fit. So your shoulder can't work, but you're doing legs and you're gymming legs and you're doing cardio, whatever you can do, as much as you can do, where this thing was full stop, nothing. And then to get back to rugby training, I felt horrendous. That first couple of weeks was bad, you know, you're just completely out of shape. Like, everything disappeared. But again, people told me, listen, muscle memory, you'll get it back quickly. It's going to take a couple of weeks. And like, I would say the first 3 weeks was tough. And then you just start to, you know, playing professionally for 10 years, your body gets used to certain things. So I just think, luckily, I got it back quicker than I thought, than it felt at first, that initial few training sessions. But yeah, it was brutal those first 3 weeks. Yeah, I reckon I could be maybe a little bit better off, but I don't know. We'll see. I just think the rest did me well, you know, getting 5 months, basically, or say 4.5 months of rest. I think maybe, you know, extended my career a little bit, hopefully extended the career a little bit. So I'm feeling good at the moment. That first couple sessions that I could actually do with the team and train with the lads, I was like a kid again, just running around. It's like almost you can't get enough of it, eh? And then, you know, you get times in your career where you're playing 20, 30 games on the bounce and your body's real sore, and then you're not keen for training, and it's amazing how that little bit of a break could just flick that switch again, or, you know. So, yeah, it's been good.
Look, thanks for your time. Much appreciated. And again, good to see you.
Thanks, Liam. Hello.
Thanks for listening. And a reminder, you can find all the To The Last Drop podcasts on the Brendan Nell YouTube channel, iono.fm, Spotify, player.fm, Pocket Casts, Google Podcasts, and iTunes, or wherever you find your favorite podcasts.